This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Primary elections are next Tuesday in Wisconsin. Many voters on the western side of the state will go to the ballot box to decide who should get to compete in the November 6th general election. One of the districts up for grabs is the 96th Assembly seat. It represents all or part of Crawford, Vernon, and Monroe counties. The district has been held since 2005 by Republican Representative Lee Nierison of Westby. The Republican candidate hoping to replace him, Lauren Oldenburg, is unopposed in the primaries, but two Democrats are facing off on August 14th. Today, we're hosting a debate between the candidates, Alicia Leinberger and Paul Burr, both of Viroqua. All right, Alicia, we'll have you go first. Can you explain who you are and why you're running to represent the 96th State Assembly District?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a mom, first and foremost. That's my favorite job. I also own a solar energy installation business in Viroqua, Wisconsin. It's right on Main Street. And if I get this job, I will put my office there, and so we'll have our first assembly office right in the district. The reason why I'm running has a lot to do with my experience last time in 2016 and this growing feeling out there that people are really hungry for a voice to represent them in rural areas. And frankly, feel like neither party is doing a very good job of that. Most of the conversation that's happening in the Capitol has to do with urban areas, has to do with corporations that aren't even from Wisconsin and how to help them versus taking care of the people that really are the strength, the backbone of Wisconsin and the rural economics, which is rooted in dairy farming. And so just realizing that I felt compelled this time to run again, one, because I had the experience from last time to learn from, so it was easier to jump into the campaign, but even more so because I want to reflect that voice. I want to get into the Capitol and be a strong voice for us in rural Wisconsin and basically get the money out of our democracy. I think there's too much influence of corporate donors, and then when the representatives get in, too much influence of corporate lobbyists. And almost everyone that I talk with, whether they're Republican or Democrat, agrees. And so I'm a very good person because of my experience as a woman in renewable energy, which is a male-run industry, how to get in there and stand firm and speak up for us in rural Wisconsin.
Paul, we'll have you respond to the same question. Can you explain who you are and why you're running to represent the 96th Assembly seat?
Yes, I'm a dairy farmer, a lifelong dairy farmer from Viroqua, as you said. And I'm also a husband and a father of three grown children now. And I'm a grandfather of four children, four delightful grandchildren. And I'm running. As I look back over my life, I feel that I've been very lucky and I've benefited by so many of the institutions and the infrastructure that was put in place by leaders and people that came before me. And I feel that some of that is going away. And I feel that rural Wisconsin in our part of the state is suffering from being ignored by the current agenda in Madison. Our roads are extremely deteriorated. I think that we are not putting broadband in place as quickly as we could. And I think that our schools are under attack. So I felt that at this point in my life, I should do something to give back to repay everything that I've received. Lucky to have lived in this beautiful part of the state. And I want to make sure that young people will have a place, will want to move back here and will want to live here because it has good roads, good schools, high-speed internet.
Paul, what experiences or skills make you a good fit for this position?
Well, I've lived and worked beside people of this district my whole life. I've sat at kitchen tables and tried to pencil out with fellow farmers how to go forward and figure out paths for them to continue to make a living on their land. But I've also served with many of my neighbors on committees and councils and boards that have given me experience and some of the background knowledge that I feel will serve me well to represent them, represent their lives, the fabric of our whole district. I feel that I've been trained by my neighbors and friends, and I feel I would represent them well.
Alicia, what experiences or skills make you a good fit for this position?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. Thank you for the question. I like that question. I kind of feel like I've been preparing for this for a long time, most of my adult life. So when I finished college, I graduated from college with a degree in ecology on purpose to go into the Peace Corps. And I think that was the beginning where I really learned the value of service. So while I was in the Peace Corps, I was in El Salvador, and I was working in agriculture. I learned soil conservation, integrated pest management, working with farmers, coffee farmers, but cooperative coffee farmers. And then, fortunately, when I came back, I lived in Madison for a while, and I worked in four coffee farmers still, worked in fair trade markets, and learning how to change the trade chain and get more of the consumer's dollar back onto the farm. That gave me a very deep look at policy, both domestic policy and international policy, and it helped me understand the relationship between policy and how our lives turn out for our families mostly in rural communities and for farmers. Then I got into renewable energy. I sort of fell into it through an entrepreneurial spirit, and I've been working in renewable energy for the past 16 years. And again, I got a very deep look at how policy affects our lives and the way that we want to shape our world and our economies. In addition, as being a small business owner that works a lot with policy, it gave me a lot of exposure to legislators and to how policy is written and what policies are not being passed and why they are not being passed the way we actually want to. So I think that that sort of long 25 years of experience puts me in a great place to go into the Capitol and get started on day one.
Alicia, what is the biggest challenge facing your district?
You know, I think the biggest challenge, not just in our district, but statewide, and for all sorts of people, is healthcare costs. They are just skyrocketing, and it seems that there's no end. And I think there's a reason for that, and I think it has to do with profit. We are kind of unique in the world to be such a wealthy country and still rely on private healthcare insurers and private pharmaceutical companies to set their own prices for what we pay for our healthcare. And we're subject to that. We're captive, a captive customer base, as they call it in business world, and they know it. And so I think what we need to do about that is we need to back it up. We need to get back to a place where we put people first, patients first, as my friend Dr. Lawler likes to say, and get the profit out of it. So how do we do that? Well, the first thing we do is we get our federal tax dollars back into our state and expand Badger Care, and that will cover 20,000 more people, and we'll save a bunch of money, too. And then from there, we can begin to we have quite a few pieces of legislation that have already been introduced, so we can begin to look over those pieces of legislation, state legislation, and see which ones are going to be best for this period in time and expand Badger Care to the entire state so that all Wisconsinites have access to it. And then the next step is to get even beyond that and get to a single-payer system. And that is where we have there are so many things that are already single-payer in our state. When we look at roads, there's one single-payer. Same sort of negotiating power when it comes to our health care, where we really need to make sure that our legislators and our representatives are voting for our interests and the things that make the most sense for our families. And so that I think that's the biggest one, and that's the top priority of our campaign.
Paul, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing your district?
Well, in my estimation of what I can do, it would be roads. I think that that is an accomplishable, I can accomplish this as a goal to try to figure out a new way to prioritize roads in the eyes of the agenda from Madison. We need to have safe roads and good roads, both for travel and to conduct commerce in rural Wisconsin. Right now, our roads are on a replacement schedule of 80 to 100 years in the different counties in my district. That's completely unsustainable. We have roads that have no shoulders and are breaking up. These are unsafe roads, and it's an irresponsible government that doesn't maintain safe roads for its citizens to drive on. So I think that's the first need that needs to be addressed immediately. We have to come up with a plan that sustains our roads and puts them back in the condition that they were 20 years ago on a sustainable path. Right now, every person, according to a study, every vehicle sustains $632 worth of wear and tear on it each year. If you use 1,000 gallons of fuel, that's a 63-cent hidden tax that we're all paying. And that's real money, too. So somehow we have to maintain safe roads if we're going to have businesses and people in rural Wisconsin.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're hosting a debate between the Democratic candidates running for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly seat. We're here with Paul Burr and Alicia Leinberger, both of Viroqua. This year, WPR is asking people around the state what issues they care about ahead of this year's elections through our project Beyond the Ballot. I talked to Randy Skinner, a small business owner in Vernon County, about what the most important issue is to her. Let's hear what she had to say.
I'm going
to
go with water and the fact that local control has been stripped away, and that is causing a huge problem environmentally for us, and we need that back. We've managed to keep frack sand mining out, and we're doing a pretty good job about circling the wagons against CAFOs, but I know in certain areas of Wisconsin it's a huge problem, and we're all very aware of that and hoping to forestall that situation here in the western part.
Paul, how do you think the state is doing when it comes to protecting water and our environmental resources?
Well, I think it is distancing itself from the responsibility of oversight. It's taken the DNR, it's reduced the number of scientists and monitors of our water. So I think that is definitely troublesome. I do think, and water, clean water is one of the real assets of rural Wisconsin. That's why we live here. It's a beautiful area with clean water and clean air. And no traffic. So if we must treasure this and make sure it's not fouled. My farm was a conservation farm of the year in Vernon County a few years ago, and I'm extremely proud of that, and I think that should be a priority for all landowners. But I think that somehow the state, every citizen in the state should realize that they're stakeholders in farmers' decisions, and they should find ways to nudge farmers in the right direction, because it does cost farmers money to maintain, in the short term, to maintain conservation practices. So somehow we have to make sure that we're all on the same team playing for the same goals and do that. And we also need to make sure we have monitoring in place so we know where we are and what our water is doing so we can correct it in the future.
Alicia, how do you think the state is doing when it comes to protecting our water and other environmental resources?
The state's getting a failing grade when it comes to that. And just since this the current administration has been in, it seems like they came in with the idea open for business, but actually it should have been Wisconsin is for sale. And that's what they've been doing. They've been selling off piece by piece through frac sand mines. They've been selling off permitting to water. And since you bring it up, this is a hot button issue for me personally. This is why I got into the race last time, because of our Representative Lee Narasin's ushering through of the high capacity well bill. The high capacity well bill basically gives permanent permitting status to all high capacity wells, which are 100,000 gallons or more per day. We don't have very many of them in Vernon County, so it was pretty suspicious to me. Why is he so raring to go on this bill? But it's because of what the state wanted him to do, and wanted all of the legislators to do, which is hand over all of our common resources, whether it's water, land, air, it doesn't matter. They're willing to sell it off so that their corporate donors can come in and profit off of it, and they are profiting off of it. And it's frac sand mines, it's industrial agriculture in terms of CAFOs, in terms of vegetables, it's other metallic mining in the state. So I think it's a failing grade altogether. And it would be, that's our second priority actually, is water protection. Thank you, Ms. Randy Skinner. She's a friend of mine and I appreciate hearing her voice. She's one of the voices that we are reflecting through our campaign. And we will make we are making very strong strides to protect our water, not just in our district, but all across the state, because we do feel like it is our most precious resource, one that we all share and that we cannot put in harm's way just for a nickel and a handshake.
Alicia, do you think the state, or do you think communities in your district have enough local control to address these issues?
No, they don't. And that's another point. Thank you for putting those questions so close together, because you're hitting on something, a core problem within the administration right now. They are like whittling away at our abilities in our communities to make decisions about things that are affecting our lives directly. So one of the things that I've gotten to do this time around that I didn't get to do last time that I wanted to, and it has been the most illuminating experience, but that is to go to town board meetings, village board meetings, city council, and county board and committee meetings, as well as last night I went to the Soldiers Grove Fire Department, volunteer fire department meeting, and you hear truly what is happening in terms of pulling their ability to make decisions and the funding to make those decisions away from them. And so I hear the words unfunded mandate over and over, where the state is saying, you have to do this, and we're not going to tell you how, we're not going to give you any money to pay for it. And so what happens is those costs get absorbed into usually utility, some sort of utility rate, or other taxpayer rate that's not property tax, because there's a levy limits on that. So it looks like to local communities that their local representatives are making these decisions, and they're not. They're just following what the state is heavy-handedly telling them to do, and it's breaking communities apart. It's pitting people against each other. It's way over the top. I could tell so many stories. Anyways, I guess the point is that is another. It's our third priority. So, is to get in there. Our priority is to get our tax dollars back into our local communities. But in order to do that, what we need to do is tell the state that it's our right to make our own decisions at the local level, and we're going to do that together.
Paul, do you think communities in your district have enough local control to address these issues?
Well, we've certainly seen a deterioration of local control in the last 8 years. Whether it's our public schools and how they can decide to finance their operations or when they can have referendums. And I think the principle that Thomas Jefferson said, that government closest to the people is the best government. And I think that still holds true today. These local officials have to see us every day, and they should be able to make decisions. We as a community should be able to decide, communities should be able to decide what they want to be and define themselves. So I think that there is a lot of these rules that have been put in place have tied the hands of our local officials, and as a local lacrosse official said, it's a death by a thousand cuts. And for an example, lacrosse tried to impose a resort tax to fix roads that badly need fixed here in La Crosse County, but they were overruled by the state, said that they had no right to impose a resort tax. That would have taxed people that were tourists in the area and allowed them, the local officials, to do some fixing on the roads that the state wasn't doing, and they were denied that opportunity. So I think this has to be, this death by a thousand cuts has to be stopped, and local control should be returned.
Also connected to these issues, as you brought up, Paul, is agriculture. Dairy farmers have been struggling for almost 4 years now thanks to low milk prices, and the value of cropland actually fell in Wisconsin this year because of low prices and worries over trade. Paul, what do farmers in your district and around the state need from state government to be more successful?
Well, a lot of this is federal issues that are driving these prices and policies that we have. The state government doesn't get to decide because we have open borders, so milk flows freely, corn flows freely between borders. Obviously, this last month with the tariffs, we've seen a deterioration of our milk prices and soybean prices, corn to some degree. This is no way to do business. But as a state, the state can be a partner with dairy, but they're limited in how much they can do. We can't make a business profitable at the state level, but we need to provide the infrastructure so they can, and the also to encourage the Wisconsin idea so we can still get advice from the university. Wisconsin idea has been in place since I started farming, and it certainly through your radio station and through my extension agent, I've learned continuing learning throughout my career. And those kind of things certainly help as we adapt our state, our district, to the new economy and find new ways to produce at cheaper ways to produce, more efficient ways to produce. And I think that that's we have to farm smart.
Alicia, what do farmers in your district and around the state need from state government to be more successful?
I think there's a lot that we can do at the state level, Paul, and I think that it's really unfortunate that you don't see that. I don't know, honestly, why you're running for this office if you can't figure out how to get this done. I think that one of the main things that we can do is we can encourage the kind of conservation and stewardship practices that we have deep roots for in our district, in the 96th district. What's that's going to do for farmers on the front end is it's going to help them lower their costs on the farm and allow us all to protect the water and the soil that we all rely on. But what's most important, I think, about that kind of model and how we as legislators need to help them is we need to strengthen the cooperative markets that are also from the 96th, and that the farmers, our rural economy base is built on this idea that cooperatives pulling together can help set markets that are not going to be subject to the kind of export market whims or the kind of commodity market whims that farmers are currently subjected to. We need to get back to a market system that favors the small family farmer and the value of that product, not just the value to the consumer, but the value to the whole rural economy. We have Organic Valley, which is a specific kind of market distinction that we can parallel with a conventional type of market distinction, not just for dairy. And in addition, just because I don't have a lot of time, we also need to focus on diversification of agricultural markets for farmers. And legislators can certainly help that happen through new DATCAP programs and other ideas and research. So, I have a lot of ideas about how to make that happen at a state level.
Paul, I want to offer you a chance to follow up on that.
Well, I can tell you that I've been in agriculture for 5 decades. I know the ag economy inside and out. I know what can be done. I've seen a lot of things come up and down the pike. As for how much, I don't think my opponent realizes how much production capability we have in this state. We have one of my campaign volunteers said that he'd have to haul 17 semi-loads of corn to a farmer's market every week to market it that way. And that's just not going to work. But I do believe that we can encourage value-added agriculture, such as organic, but I think that there's many other crops that we can encourage that can be done on a small scale level that suits our small farms.
Alicia, any rebuttal or follow-up to
that? Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm saying, Paul, and perhaps you're too far into it to actually see the forest for the trees, but the idea is to change the way markets are done, not this idea of producing as much as possible and selling as much as possible, but the idea of creating markets that have an inherent value for a different reason, and actually going against the idea of get big or get out, and working towards smaller, more local markets. So not trying to export as much corn as possible, but creating a different kind of agriculture and a different kind of market base. And I think there are ideas, there are examples out there of how we can do that. There are farmers that are making it work, and we need to raise those farmers up and put those farmers at the center of basically a new kind of rural advisory council. That's what I'd like to create as a legislature, so that we can get those ideas and spread them out to the rest of the state and really make these markets strong for our farmers and hold that rural economy.
Alicia Leinberger is here with us today for a debate ahead of next week's primary elections. She's a Democratic candidate running for the 96th Assembly District. Also joining us is her opponent, Paul Burr of Viroqua. Coming up, we'll continue the debate between the Democratic candidates and hear from the Republican candidate running for the 96th Assembly seat. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. For more information about WPR's election year project, Beyond the Ballot, and to hear from voters from around the state, check out wpr.org/ballot. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Candidates across Wisconsin will face off during primary elections next Tuesday to decide who will get to appear on the November ballot. In the southwestern region, one of the primary races is for the 96th Assembly seat, currently held by Republican Representative Lee Nearson. The Republican hoping to replace Nearson, Lauren Oldenburg, is unopposed. We'll hear from him later in the show. Now we'll continue our debate between the Democratic candidates facing off in the primary, Paul Burr and Alicia Leinberger, both of Viroqua. Alicia, what are your thoughts on the state's efforts so far to improve broadband access in rural areas, and what more can be done?
Yeah, that was a really fascinating question to me. I was hearing it all over the place, and so I got on the phone with a few of the telecommunication general managers in the area, and one specifically at Richland, Shannon Clark. He's on the National Telecommunications Board for co-ops. And so that was fascinating to me to really understand what is going on here. Why can't we get this done? And it turns out that there's, at the federal level, there are some subsidies for three private people, private companies, and those subsidies are getting in the way of us being able to get it done. In addition to, of course, our administration not taking the state taxes, or the federal taxes, I'm sorry, again, and putting them back into our state like so many other states have done. So there, it's a combination of favoring private companies, again, over our constituents. So what can be done? There's some folks that are working right now on a broadband group to think about different ways that we can get this done in our district without waiting for state or federal to do it. And I'm kind of preliminarily on that group. And we're thinking about ways to organize ourselves into, of course, cooperatives. And how can we cooperatively purchase the infrastructure and get it into our rural communities and then be able to compete with these larger profitable companies when they come in and try to take back the customer base, right? So that's the real challenge. However, also having an experience in my renewable energy experience, I'm very familiar with the electrification efforts of the 1940s and how we made it a priority in the state to make sure that all rural areas, through cooperatives again, had electricity. And I think we need to make that same sort of commitment as legislators and make sure that no matter how it happens, we get it done and quickly so that our rural communities can thrive just like the rest of the state.
Paul, what are your thoughts on the state's efforts so far to improve broadband access, and what more can be done to address this problem?
Well, there has been some grants that have been issued that have been helpful in getting some rural areas and some communities hooked up to broadband, and this is all well and good. As I've met more and more people in the district, I've met quite a few telecommuters that have chosen to move back to this area. I think that's part of our future. As more and more of the people that have, young people that have moved away, one person I met was from, had moved back from San Francisco and was telecommuting into work. And, but to do that requires high-speed internet, and we can't leave any place out in the county, in the whole district, because we want everyone treated the same, and so there's access. And land values don't fall because house values don't fall because there's no access to broadband. So I think low interest loans to any business that shows that they'll effectively install broadband in all the corners of the district should be a priority. That's basically how electricity was brought to rural Wisconsin through the Rural Electrification of America Act, and I think it would be a good model. But so far the state has refused some of the money in the past, and in the future I think that is recognized as being short-sighted, and we must prioritize this and get everybody wired up in rural Wisconsin.
For WPR's election year project Beyond the Ballot, I talked with Shannon Gebauer, a voter from Monroe County. I asked her what the most important issue to her in this year's election.
I think the most important thing for me in this year's election might be improving our infrastructure. Roads, bridges, everything seems to be kind of deteriorating. We see a lot of patchwork going on, but I hear all the time that it's difficult to pay for.
Road funding was a big issue in the last budget cycle. Paul, how well did the legislature address the lack of road funding in our state, especially for rural communities?
Well, this is, of course, one of the main reasons I'm running. I think that in Vernon County, we have a bridge that's been out for 2 years. I think this bridge symbolizes what the current agenda in Madison, how they rank our rural Wisconsin as a priority. I think that we need to reprioritize and have roads and proper funding as the first thing that should be done in Madison. Right now, last year in the last budget cycle, we borrowed $400 million to fix roads. That added on to our previous debt means that 22% of all our tax money that's collected in the gas tax, 22 cents out of every dollar, goes to service debt now. Each year we continue to borrow to fix roads, we will increase that. That's not sustainable, and especially when there is no other source of funding for highway on the horizon in this current agenda. So we need to stop some of the big road projects that are happening in the southeastern part of the state. We need to pay down some of this debt that we've accumulated in the Department of Transportation, and we need to find ways to move money around to fund the repair and building of our roads and bridges so that we have safe and reliable transportation in this part of the state.
Alicia, how well did the legislature address the lack of road funding in the last budget cycle, especially for rural counties?
You know, I think the legislature itself has been trying. You know, they've wanted to pass a 5-cent gas tax. Even the speaker has wanted to do it. And the only person who stopped them is specifically Mr. Scott Walker, the governor. So we have to get a new governor if we're going to get this done. That's first priority. But the legislature and most of the counties in the state have passed a resolution to say, we want a 5-cent gas tax. Let's get that done. Come on, folks. This is easy. And then secondly, I think it's really important in my business, in my home, it's not a good idea to borrow mountains of debt for things that are essential to functioning. So this borrowing thing has to stop. We have to find a way to prioritize our roads and make that a very top priority. And in addition to the 5-cent gas tax, make sure, and the 5-cent gas tax, just to clarify, needs to have some sort of automatic check on it so that every year we can keep up. In addition to that, we need to make sure that there's the appropriate amount of funding is directed into our rural areas and through the towns and counties. I've been thinking about this a lot also as a business person and wondering, why are we hiring only private companies to do our roads? We have a single payer road system, by the way. We have one payer and we contract out to private companies to do this. And this came up in a conversation with our Vernon County Highway director, who said to me, was talking about costing out road repair and how he can do it for a lot less than the private companies can. And I was thinking, why are we doing this? Why are we wasting money in this way? Are we benefiting someone that isn't us? And I think that's what's happening. So I'd also like to look closely at that and how we are paying for the construction of roads and if there's a better way to get that done that will be more cost effective for our communities.
Alicia, you started to touch on this. My next question was going to be, how should the state pay for fixing our roads? So I wonder if there's anything you'd like to add.
Well, you know, I guess I don't, other than the 5-cent gas tax, and I don't feel like we need to go to extraordinary measures at this time, because there are a lot of other things in our state that need to be paid for as well and reprioritized. But I would like to, I guess this is a clue to me. So my Vernon County Highway Director is on the County Highway Commissioners group, and those guys together, I think, probably have some really good ideas about how to get this done. They are the right in between the state and the most local levels. They work with both. And so I think that if we can get those guys more into the driver's seat and helping us figure out this problem, not just how to pay for it, but also how to get it done in the most effective and efficient way. And in addition, get the state out of the way. Like, I'll just bring up one example that makes me kind of crazy. Very recently, in this recent budget, the state made it illegal, here's another local control issue, for counties to share highway department equipment, so trucks and line painting things. So Vernon County and La Crosse County used to do this. The state made it illegal. And so Tara Johnson, the chair of the La Crosse County, when asked, why is this happening? She said, I think they want it to be privatized. So again, they're looking for a way to hand over the business for the captured customer base to their private company friends and be able to make profit off of something, and they're not concerned about if it's the most cost-effective way to do it. I think that we as state legislators owe it to our constituents to walk that back and make sure that our constituents and our taxpayer dollars are spent as wisely as possible on the things that are most essential for all of us.
Paul, how should the state pay for fixing our roads?
Well, obviously, it costs money to do this. I think it has to be come. I imagine there'll have to be a gas tax addressed. I hate to estimate how much it will be. I have to see the numbers. I like to base my decisions on facts and science, and I haven't seen enough numbers to know exactly how much it'll cost. But the bill gets bigger every day. Because as we are speaking, our roads are depreciating. And every year that we continue to not fund it, it gets more expensive to build them. So we're not really saving money. We're just kicking a can down a bad road. And in the meantime, we're making decisions that spend enormous amounts of money in one part of the state. The Foxconn issue it is going to commit a huge amount of money far into the future in the very southeast corner of the state. That some of that could have been road money for this part of the state and throughout. I think that the number I've seen to rebuild our roads is somewhere around $6 billion, and Foxconn is going to be $4.5 billion over the lifetime of the project. So I think obviously, gas tax will be a part of the equation, but there'll have to be some other smart decisions made.
That's Paul Burr, one of the Democratic candidates competing in the August 14th primary for the 96th Assembly District. Also joining us for today's debate is his challenger, Alicia Leinberger. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Paul, how do we maintain and or attract young people and families to Wisconsin, especially to largely rural areas like your district?
Well, the main reason people move into an area is because has good schools. That's I see where my children settled. They settled where there were good schools and high-paying jobs. Part of the reason they needed high-paying jobs was cost of student debt. They had to repay their loans. They needed some good jobs to take care of that. So we have to have good public schools. And in order to have good public schools, we have to be committed to them. I'm a product of public schools. My children are a product of public schools. And I think that the voucher system is undermining it. And so we have to address that. I think that to have taxpayers pay for people to have private school educations is not what our tax dollars have traditionally been used for, and it needs to be a more public conversation if that's what we're going to turn into, because I think it is going to result in the dissolution of our public school system. So public schools are a big part of it, jobs, and I think the broadband, to get broadband into every corner of the district is important because that is going to be part of our future. Tourism is going to be a part of our future to bring young people in those capacities. And also we need a good infrastructure. Our roads and bridges have to be functioning. People don't want to move into a place with a highway that's crumbling in front of their house. So I think it's a basic, take care of the basics, build it, and they will come. And that is how you have to approach this.
Alicia, how do you think we can maintain and or attract young people and families to Wisconsin, especially to largely rural areas like your district?
Wisconsin is a beautiful state. I mean, I think that when people come here and they experience it, and I guess I'm speaking both people from outside of Wisconsin come to Wisconsin, but even more importantly, people who from other parts of the state come to the 96th district, they kind of fall in love. And I think that's what we do is we just get them there. It's funny, I was at the beginning of the campaign, I was attending a lot of tourism and economic development meetings. I really wanted to see what was going on in that realm. And one thing that I noticed, which was really interesting to me, I heard people saying, we're losing our young people, our population is going up. And so that was the economic development stuff. And then the tourism stuff had all pictures of retired people in it. And I said, what the heck is going on here? Because if you want to attract people to come and stay and live, your tourism should also reflect young families and young people. And we should be marketing to areas of Madison, Chicago, Minneapolis, and other cities, to the places where young people and young families are hanging out. And this is because I have met a lot of people. I'm from Viroqua. And so in Viroqua, there are quite a few. There's actually a number. Oh, my gosh, when I think about it. The housing market there is going insane because people want to move there. So these young families, they come to visit, they come to kayak, they come to bike, and they literally start thinking about, how can I move here? It costs so much less money. Telecommuting is a big thing, and there's a lot of folks. Some of my best friends are telecommuting. But another thing is starting local small businesses, entrepreneurial small businesses, and that... that has to do with a lot. It has to do with healthcare. It has to do with just the thriving markets for young people. It has to do with good food. Anyways, there's a lot to it.
I'm sorry. Thank you. We'll have to stop you there. To wrap up the debate, we'll have you each respond 1 minute. Both of you are running as Democratic candidates in the race. And Alicia, what makes you unique in this race?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm a woman. There's never been a woman to represent this and to represent this district. And I think something else that makes me unique in this race is I am not tied to party. So while I'm running as a Democrat on the Democratic side, and I believe in democracy incredibly strongly, I'm also not running as a representative to just serve the party when I get in there, either Republican or Democrat. I'm running specifically to go in there and bring our rural voice at its most authentic level into the Capitol, which means that I'm willing to stand up to either party. I'm willing to challenge, most of all, the big money campaign contributions and the corporate lobbyists in the office. And I would like to work with all the legislators to get back to the core heart of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin that we love, which is rural Wisconsin and our rural agricultural economy.
Paul, what makes you unique in this race?
Well, at this time in my life, I'm not looking on this as a career. This is a mission. I feel that I want to represent this area and bring back and sustain the noble tradition of rural living. I feel I have the history, the leadership experience, and the commitment to be an excellent representative for our area. I am deeply rooted in rural Wisconsin. I grew up in our district, and I farmed the land for 40 years alongside all these residents, but I've also welcomed many newcomers and their ideas and their perspectives. So I feel that I will effectively bring the ideas and concerns of the 96th district to our capital, and I will work as hard as a dairyman can to ensure a bright future for all Wisconsinites.
Paul Burr and Alicia Leinberger are Democratic candidates running for Wisconsin's 96th Assembly seat. They'll face off next Tuesday during the state's primary elections. The Republican candidate running for the 96th does not have a challenger in the primary race. We wanted to take a moment to hear about who he is.
My name is Lauren Oldenburg. I'm a fourth-generation dairy farmer out here in the Viroqua, Wisconsin area. So I've been farming here since 1987 when I came back from college after 3 years at UWL. So, and that's been my experience on a dairy farm. So,
yeah. First, can you talk a little bit about why you're running for the 96th Assembly seat?
Well, back in January, Lee Nearson, the incumbent, approached me to see if I was interested. So I did a little bit of thought there. Then in March, sat down with him and sat down with Robin Voss and Madison. They answered my questions, what it would take. And I figured, I could do the job. And it's an honor to be asked to do this. So I thought, hey, let's do it. And so I can serve the 96th district, and I'm proud, and it's an honor to be asked and to serve the people of the 96th district. So,
what experiences do you have that you feel makes you a good fit for this position?
Back in the mid-90s, I was on the local town board. I was on for 4 years, and two of those years I was town chairman. So that gave me a lot of experience dealing with the public and issues that come up at the local level, local government level. And I'm currently on Chaseburg Senex Board, which is a local service co-op down here in Chaseburg, Wisconsin. Been on there since 1999, serving as secretary treasurer for a while now, and serving as president of that board. And in 2003, I was elected to the Westby Creamery Board. I was on there for 14 years, and the last five years I was on there, I was president of the board, and I had to leave because we have term limits.
And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.